The Fan on Demand.
Welcome to Primetime Sports. Will you all relax? McCowan's back. When's McCown back? McCown's back in a couple of weeks. He's on the holidays again.
You had a caller that thought you were Bob, though, so.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's not bad.
A couple of people say they missed me in my morning show, too, which was nice. But anyhow, it's Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown. McCown's back in a couple of weeks. I think we've got Sid Sixero.
Wow.
Chair next week.
That's a step down.
Ken Reed of Sportsnet. You may be here for both both me and young Mr. Sixero.
It's summer, as I've said before. Desperate times call for desperate measures, so whatever it takes, I'm happy to take the work.
I prefer to say disparate times call for disparate measures.
There you go.
But anyhow, that's, you know, neither here nor there. Big news in Toronto today.
What is the big news in Toronto today? Which one?
Cody Franson.
I thought you were meaning Sergio Santos.
No, Cody Franson. And the Leafs agreeing on a one-year deal worth $3.3
million. Mm-hmm.
So that's good. That gives fans somebody else to boo besides Dion Phaneuf. That's
honestly
awesome.
People are actually worked up about that. What's to get worked up about? I mean, I'm sure both sides are just very happy that they avoid arbitration.
Yeah.
Who really wants to talk badly about their employer and who really wants to talk bad about their employee in front of some guy?
People are like hammering this on Twitter. I'm going,
why?
Cody Franson, relax. It's 1 year.
What did people think Cody Franson was going to get from the Leafs?
I like it. People, I would have. 3.3 is way too much. 3.1 maybe, but 3.3.
Come on.
Anyhow, and Sergio Santos, the Jays reliever, has been designated for assignment.
You surprised it took this long for the Jays to make this decision finally on Santos? Because for years I've been hearing, oh, the potential. I don't care about potential. Just do it. And he just, with the exception of a couple months, he never really did it.
Yeah, you know what? Great arm, great stuff, really likable guy, mm-hmm. works hard. I think that what has happened here is bullpens are a tricky commodity.
Yeah.
When there's a weak link in the bullpen, everybody else generally falls out of their most comfortable role in order to help out. And, you know, I mean, the worst-case scenario, yesterday against the Texas Rangers, Casey Jansen struggles. Aaron Loop has to come in and close the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Jays got to the point where carrying Sergio Santos was just creating too much of an issue. The same thing with Steve Delabar early in the year. They were unable to do their job. So effectively, if you're John Gibbons, when you put Sergio Santos in a game, you're probably already planning to put somebody else in there. And I think Rob Rasmussen will come up and give the Jays a little bit of bullpen depth through the Boston series. And then Aaron Sanchez is going to be up here by the weekend, and he'll give them a power arm. But mm-hmm. I made the point in the first hour. It would not surprise me if by the middle of August, this bullpen has three or four new faces, including Aaron Sanchez. Because we've spent so much time worrying about the lineup, and with good reason. The lineup hasn't scored a lot of runs. But we spent so much time worrying about that it's almost as if we forgot to keep track of the bullpen. And it's one of the worst bullpens statistically in baseball right now. And you can't use the old excuse that they've been overworked, because they're not. They're like 14th. They're right in the middle of Major League Baseball in terms of bullpen usage. So it doesn't surprise me. I think we're going to see a number of moves.
I was just looking at some Buffalo stats. It's amazing when you look at their roster, some of the pitchers that are on it, because I also heard you talking about prospects, and prospects are only worth what other GMs will give you and things like that. And, you know, you have Sanchez down there, and his numbers aren't fantastic down there, but I don't think they're all about numbers down there. But when you look at some of the names on Buffalo, Kyle Drabeck's down there, Ricky Romero's down there, Steve Delabar's down there. Now it looks like Santos is going to be down there. Like, there's some crazy names that once upon a time or another, these guys were all heralded as going to be very useful arms at the major league level. And there's at least four or five actual big names in Buffalo just collecting paychecks now. I don't think Santos will end up there. I think somebody will take a chance on him, won't they?
Well, I mean, Alex would love somebody to take a chance on him. You know, if you're a contending team, you're not going to take a chance on him, because God knows, you'd essentially be saying, we think we can reinvent the wheel, and I don't know anybody who wants to reinvent the wheel in the middle of a pennant race. You're also picking up just less than $2 million to take a look at the guy. And he's a guy, frankly, who will probably be a free agent in the offseason because I don't see any way that the Jays offer him, pick up the option on him, which is worth $6 million next year. So unless you really, 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 really like Sergio Santos, I can't see any team claiming him. And, you know, also keep in mind that the Jays thought they had a deal with the Texas Rangers for him in the winter, and the Rangers backed out because they had concerns about his health. So, sure, if Alex would be doing handsprings if somebody picked up Sergio Santos, but I just don't see it happening.
It's such a sad thing when you watch a pitcher just lose command of his fastball. Like, he just could not get that thing over the plate. One of the luxuries we have about working here is every once in a while we get to end the, watch a bit of the game with Zonnie, and Zonnie usually comes in around the ninth inning and we'll do a hit out of the game. And Santos came in one night and we were talking. I was just saying, what happened? How come this guy can't get his fastball over? And Zonnie was literally just calling what pitch he would throw next. And he was just nailing it every time. And this guy, unless someone would literally chase a slider out of the zone, he wasn't getting people out, or at least wasn't getting them out easily. It was kind of sad to watch because you could see the potential that he did have when he was at his best, but this guy just never was.
Yeah, and you know, the Jays looked at him. I think very quickly they kind of soured in the idea of him closing. But I think they looked at him as a power arm, somebody you could bring in the seventh or eighth inning to get a strikeout. And he just, his command isn't good enough. And like I said, it's like anything else. When you put Sergio Santos in the game and he starts to lose his command, you've got to put another pitcher in the game. And I really think, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, his approach in this right now is, even healthy, he needs an everyday second baseman or an everyday third baseman. If they play Brett Laurie at second, they need a third baseman. They need an everyday infielder this year, next year, and the year after that. I mean, they don't have anybody in the organization who's going to fill that role. They need an everyday infielder. You would probably like another veteran pitcher so that you can maybe take it a little easy in Drew Hutchison and Marcus Stroman. And you'd like an impact bat. You know, and you could, whether or not that's the second baseman, you'd like an impact bat against left-handed pitching. And you also need relievers. And I'm sure Alex is looking at this and going, all right, typically, what are the easiest things to come by? Well, the easiest things to come by are relief pitching. I mean, there are teams like Tampa Bay that just, they rebuild their bullpen every year. They just hand grenade. New bullpen.
And numbers would tell you basically do to have success, because you don't rarely get 2-3 solid years out of a bullpen.
No.
Usually you just get 1 year and everyone's like, oh, your bullpen's great. Then the next year it's the same guys and they don't get the job done.
Well, you know, and I had somebody with the Jays organization in spring training. We're talking about Steve Delabar and watching him pitch. And I said, what a great story this guy was last year. And the guy looked at me and said, yeah, damn it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, it's amazing how many of last year's great stories, he used the phrase that I'm going to say, crap the bed the year after.
Yeah, it's
it is true. I mean, you get to, you know, guys, whether it's baseball catching up to them, whether it's teams figuring out what they're doing, or guys just wearing down under the workload, you really do have to be cautious when you see a guy like Steve Delabar, or even frankly Brett Cecil, have the type of year they have. I mean, I'm almost at the point now, Ken, where I don't even, I mentally see somebody do that and I go, okay, sometime in April this guy's going to be in the DL or he's going to be in the minors. I've got to find somebody else to fill in. But I think Alex Anthopoulos is probably sitting back and saying that, what can I address right now? What can I make better right now? What can I make measurably better right now? Well, I can make the bullpen measurably better right now. I can add another bat, but if I don't have Edwin, I don't have Brett Laurie, and I don't have Adam Lind, you know, it's going to improve it, but it's not going to be its maximum improvement. But if I can make this bullpen better, that makes my team better immediately. And, you know, and Alex, I'm sure Alex is looking at the situation right now and saying, I've got Encarnacion and Lind coming back in 7 to 10 days. Brett Laurie probably, I mean, I've been told maybe 3 weeks, but he's thinking, how does my offense improve? Well, Lyndon Encarnacion should improve my offense. Okay, that's taken care of. Starting pitching, it's okay right now. But bullpen, I got to do something right now about the bullpen.
The sad thing to me is, you know, you're waiting those 7-10 days for Lindon and Encarnacion to come back. But these next 7-10 days, it's crucial for the Blue Jays. If you look at their schedule compared to Baltimore's schedule, now is the time to go. Now is the time to win some ball games because Baltimore is on that tough West Coast swing. Blue Jays opponents are just kind of sitting there and, waiting.
And, you know, like we talked about it in Baseball Central today. Don't look now, but Boston Red Sox, Tampa Bay, 7.5 games back. Boston's won 4 in a row, I believe. Tampa's won 5 in a row, or you know, or flip flop, whatever it is. They're 7.5 back. Mm-hmm. Boston's got 4 games here. They're only 3.5 back. Sorry, 4.5 back of the Blue Jays. So the American League East. It's funny, you know. We've been sitting here wondering, well, boy, are the Jays ever going to get back in first place? And they're chasing Baltimore, and oh, they've got all these issues. Very quietly around the All-Star break, the rest of the division kind of got closer and closer and closer.
The Red Sox had that 10-game losing streak, and outside of that, they play a little over 500 since, but like they're heating up. I watched them play in Boston the other night. They were pretty good. They've that nice win over Kansas City. But they'll don't think that they're not thinking, why not make a run for this right now? I mean, you would think that they'd be sellers, but I don't think they are. I think that they might try to put a little something together, especially if they have a successful series against Toronto.
Oh, totally. And you know, if you're the Red Sox, you can probably figure out a way, especially in this division. This may be the year to do one of those things where you say, you know what, let's just see how, let's see how good we can be young. Mm-hmm. And as much as we talk about the Jays adding players, tell you what, the Boston Red Sox go young, find themselves 2 games out of the wild card in another 3 weeks. Unlike Alex Anthopoulos, they don't have to go to ownership. Mm-hmm. Right? They'll just make a deal.
Yep, they will.
They'll make a deal if they have to.
Yankees aren't sitting there salivating 3 games out either.
This is the whole thing. If this division gets really, really tight, a couple of things are going to happen. One, Tampa Bay is not going to trade David Price, and I haven't really thought they're going to trade David Price to begin with. But all the other teams around the Blue Jays are going to start fine-tuning and making additions.
Which brings the price of every trade you're trying to make on up.
And, you know, you could put yourself in the position as well. You could find yourself in a position where teams are claiming players in order to prevent them from getting to you. So,
doing the old Yankees thing, right? Just load your bench so no one else can get them.
But it's, you know, it's an interesting time for the Jay. We made the point on this show, and I know on other shows as well, that if you're the Jays, this 7-game homestand, you're playing 14, you're playing 17 games against teams under 500, mm-hmm. 14 of them against the teams that you could call the 3 worst teams in baseball, although that has changed, 3 worst teams record-wise in the American League. If you're the Jays, you really do want to go 10-4 in those 14 games, and you really do want to go, honestly, 12-5 over 17 games.
You seriously need to put up a big number in these next 17 games.
You need to put up a big number.
To me, this is, I hate to say this is the season. It's not the season, but it's pretty big. This is it's a pretty huge stand. And to me, I still don't understand this kind of waiting thing. This guy, I remember saying a month and a half ago, make your move now. When the Jays were still had their lead, make that move now. You got them down, keep them down.
Yeah, but the problem is, I should mention, by the way, it's Primetime Sports with Jeff Blair and Ken Reed of Sportsnet. The problem is, a month and a half ago, 6 weeks ago, nobody wanted to make a move because everybody's still in it.
Then how did Oakland get Samardzija then at the start of July? See, that's what I don't get. We're all sitting
Oakland
around
got here. Oakland essentially went to the Chicago Cubs and said, "We'll give you our 2 best prospects," and they happen to be everyday players. This is the real issue facing Alex Anthopoulos. Is this team has drafted poorly and has developed players poorly. They don't have anybody even remotely close to what the Cubs got from the Oakland Athletics. The Cubs wanted everyday players. I spoke to a Cubs scout I've known for years, and he said, our thought process is very simple. If we're going to get rid of our pitchers, we are going to get young position players in return. We don't want young pitchers in return. We're going to get young position players in return. They've got 3 shortstops right now that they could move and get a major pitching asset for. And this is their approach. So if you look at the Cubs right now, if you go around their minor league system, they've got a top prospect at every position. This is a team that 2 years down the road could have a top prospect in the majors at every position. The Jays just can't match that. And you know, we talk about Jays prospects and Aaron Sanchez, and I was making the point early in the show, doesn't matter what Jeff Blair says about prospects or you say about prospects. It doesn't even matter what Alex Anthopoulos says about his prospects. If the guy sitting across the table looks at you and goes, I think Aaron Sanchez is a force starter.
Mm-hmm.
He may or may not be right, but that's what he thinks.
So it's like your old baseball cards and hockey cards. They're only worth what someone will pay for them.
Yeah.
Even though you may think they're worth $1,000.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a, you know, and absent that, what else do the Jays have to move? Well, they've got bad contracts. They got Mark Burley, $19 million next year. We've got Jose Reyes.
Is that a bad contract?
Well, no, but I'm saying if you're, to me, it's not for the Jays, but I'm saying if you're looking to trade to add something,
mm-hmm.
nobody's going to take on an $18 million contract. Nobody in midseason, nobody's going to take on $66 million, which you have left for Jose Reyes. So Alex doesn't have anything to deal. I mean, effectively, he doesn't have anything to deal. And even if we were to trade Mark Burley, the hell are you going to replace Mark Burley with?
No, you can't trade Mark
Burley.
So
it's a bad combination of shallow minor league system with not many prospects, especially position players, and a roster full of guys that are in their 30s or late 20s making a lot of money. It's hard to change that on the fly.
So what I'm getting from you is all this fishing off the waiver wire we're seeing, it's done out of necessity because there's not a lot of options otherwise.
Yeah, I think, in you know, whatever the financial constraints are, I just don't think the Jays have enough things that other people want. And I really think it's that simple. You know, and people may not, fans may not want to hear that, but again, that's, you would have to look at that and you would have to say that that's the case. And, you know, Aaron Sanchez, Marcus Stroman, Dalton Pompey, those are the three prospects everybody talks about.
Aaron Hill, that name mean anything to you though? For second base? That's not a good reaction.
Well, I mean, yeah, given how happy, and I remember covering, given how happy Aaron Hill was to get the hell out of Toronto,
mm-hmm.
nah. He would be an upgrade at second base. He would allow Brett Laurie to go to third. Tell you what I'd rather do if I'm the Jays. I'd rather have Brett Laurie at second and find myself a third baseman. Because
mm-hmm.
I think Brett Laurie at second base could be, he gives you a much better offensive return at that position than you're going to get at third base.
Definitely. Yeah, third base, you want a guy who's going to slug you a few dingers. And
yeah.
Brett Laurie statistically looks like a second baseman if you look at his numbers. Athletically, you can put him anywhere in the field.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah. Brett Laurie could play anywhere.
Yeah.
So there was hockey news today in Toronto. Oh, my God, was there hockey news. Claude Loisel, the Toronto Maple Leafs assistant general manager, had to pull the chute on joining us. So we went with Doug McLean, who's basically the Maple Leafs assistant
general
manager.
Doug doesn't work in July.
Doug's working. Let me guess. Okay, you've got, is it red wine? You're in a patio, and your wife's going to be mad because you're going to have dinner, right?
I slowed the barbecue down. I moved out to off the main patio of the cottage to the beachside patio.
The beachside patio.
The waves, they're just, I don't know if you can hear the waves, but they're like, it's just a nice wave. As Reed would know because he's from Pictou County, the waves are just starting, the tide's just coming in. So it's, anyway, it's nice and it's quiet and relaxing, which I need after a tough winter's work. And I saw Reed on TV doing primetime the other night with McCown. Jill and I were, I don't know where we were. We were getting ready to go to a Lenny Gallant concert in Charlottetown. We're sitting at the Holman Hotel. And I look and Ken Reed's on with primetime. And I pointed him out to Jill. I said, I know you've never seen him before, but he's from Pictou County and he's sort of becoming a wheel.
Yeah, he is becoming a wheel.
You know,
there's no doubt about that.
You know, it's July when you see me on primetime sports, Doug.
He looks like he's 12.
Thank you, Jill the Thrill.
I think he looks like Martin Short.
See, my wife says Ducky from Pretty in Pink, but I'll take Martin
anyway,
Short.
Anyway, we didn't have the volume. We just had the picture.
I must have sounded better then.
Anyway, it was great. I'm happy for you. You've sort of made it.
Well, somebody's got to replace you when you get your 4 months off a year, Doug. You know, I'm happy to fill in.
Three months.
Yeah, called up from the International League. Just happy to be here, Doug.
East Coast League.
Okay, I'll be honest. Yeah, East Coast League.
Yeah.
Trying to get the pucks in deep, buddy.
It's Jeff Blair, Ken Reed, and Doug McLean on Primetime Sports. So Cody Franson agrees to a one-year, $3.3 million deal, avoiding arbitration.
I guess he would agree.
Yeah, no kidding. He wanted 4-2, and the Leafs countered with 2. So there you go.
It's off. Which would, you know what, the way these arbitrations are, like typically they saw it off at 50% anyway because the arbitrator doesn't want to make a decision. So he says, okay, well, let's go halfway and neither one will be too upset. I mean, if you checked out 90% of the arbitrations, that's the way they will come out, 50-50, halfway through, and you're wasting your time going. Why don't you just saw it off and move on?
Do you ever do arbitration against the guy, Doug?
You know what? I had one guy file for arbitration in my 9 years as a GM, and that was Jamie Pusher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I flew to Toronto and met him the night before the arbitration. I said, Jamie, are you serious? You're taking me to arbitration? Are you joking? Anyway, we agreed to it the night before. So I've never gone to, we prepared a lot of arbitration cases, but we settled all of them before we ever went, so which is typically what happens. It's not unusual. Unless it becomes a sort of a bitter or a major disconnect between what the player's worth. You know, Franson at 3-3, if you want to move him, you can still move him. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate part is now, you know, I believe he'll be unrestricted this summer. And
yep. Yeah.
I mean, he hits it. He does exceptionally well. The Leafs wouldn't give him 4 because why would you give him 4 when he's going to walk at the end of the year? So you give him the 3 and you try like crazy to trade him.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you see a guy like him finishing the year at the Leafs, given that he's going to be UFA and probably cash in?
Well, he may have to finish because they haven't added any. Well, they added Komarev, and I mean, you got to add players to delete players, mm-hmm. and they haven't had a great success in adding anyone. So, you know, he's been an okay guy for them. I don't think he's their problem. You just don't want to get a guy like that too overpaid, but. I don't think Cody Franson's the problem. I think you don't like to overpay him. You think he's a useful player who can get some points. He's a big body that can, you know, take some minutes. So you're not in a panic to move him. But if the right deal, like they were, obviously it was a George's deal they were trying to do to move him, which would have made sense. I mean, you're taking maybe a guy that'll be overpaid before his career's over, but a good character guy in George's. So that one made sense to me. But now you can be a little bit patient and maybe you move him as the deadline approaches, or if he can be part of a bigger package to get somebody that they can really use and need. And in my opinion right now, they're in need of some players. And I'm looking every day saying, who are they going to get?
Mm. Well, and Doug, I know you made the point before you left here that, you know, in and among all the amongst all the talk about, well, this trade, that trade, we're looking at this guy, that guy, they're kind of up against it, aren't they?
Well, they're up against it. You know, I mean, their cap situation isn't the best, you know, and there's nobody out there.
Right. Like,
when you're making a big play for Olli Jokinen, wouldn't that tell you that things aren't rosy and mm-hmm. aren't that great? And, you know, seriously, you know, I it's not the big, bold moves we anticipated, you know, and that maybe that's okay. Maybe it's not going to hurt. But right now, when I look at the Leafs, I'm saying they are in an unbelievable dogfight to make the playoffs next year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't make the playoffs next year, it is going to get real ugly real fast because Columbus is going to be a lot better. Not sure where Ottawa is going to be, but Washington has improved. New Jersey's improved. The Islanders have improved. And the Leafs, in my opinion, haven't improved.
What could they do, Doug, to improve? Is there anything out there for them?
Well, that's the challenge, unless you can make a big trade. And let's not kid ourselves. San Jose is in the throes of trying to make some major changes. You know, Joe Thornton, can they move him? Will they move him? You know, New York looked like a possible destination for me, but now all of a sudden, you know, their cap problems are in dire straits. So that doesn't look like it's going to happen. So is there any chance they can make a big, bold move? I would say no, but it's really tough as to what they can really do now to improve their team.
Doug McLean joining Ken Reed and Jeff Blair on Primetime Sports. You know, more than ever, Doug, we're seeing teams lock up their good young players, even, frankly, even some of their just so-so young players to long-term contracts and avoiding having them go to free agency. I mean, you're looking at Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, for example.
Right.
How does a team like the Leafs get out of where they are right now without having that instant fix? Because it seems to me that what you're talking about, what other people are talking about, is there are very few instant fixes out there now, unless you want to go the offer sheet route.
Yeah, and the offer sheets aren't going to work because anybody that's worth their salt, they're going to match. So
right.
you're not going to get anybody probably through that. You got the Ryan O'Reilly thing, who would be a real nice fit for the Leafs, and he's out there. And if this gets ugly, he might be a guy you might be able to make a trade for. You know, Colorado are not awash to make the playoffs. Colorado, you know, can they soothe over the wounds of this O'Reilly situation and get him back under contract? Now that Stastny's left, it would appear to me that they desperately need him, you know? So is that a situation where you could make a deal where that type of player would come in? Well, if that type of player come in, to me, that's a real hit for the Leafs. And other than that, how many other big hits are there out there? There's not very many.
Mm. You're the GM or the president of the Leafs right now, Doug, and you're kind of laying out the scenario for them. And I know you told me when you used to be a president of Columbus, there was, you know, some stress at time and whatnot. What would the stress level be right now trying to make a move for this team when we're basically saying, man, there's not a lot you can really do at this point?
Yeah, there's not a lot of stress on the GM because if I'm Dave Nonis, I'm blaming it all on Shanahan.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you want to be the president and you want to hit the big coin and you want to be the guy, then the GM should push it all on Shanahan. As we said when Shanahan got the job, he's going to be judged like all the rest of us on wins and losses. That's what he's going to be judged on. And, you know, so if I'm Nonis, I'm pushing it all on Shanahan.
Fair enough. Here's the other thing.
You know what?
Okay.
There's not a whole lot they can do right now except hope that they can get lucky and somebody phones and says, hey, would you like to get in on an O'Reilly sweepstake? Would you like to get in on somebody like that? Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's pretty tough right now. And then you've got to sit there and say, geez, I need Bozak and Kessel and Kadri and Lupul and some of these guys to have unbelievable years.
Right.
Gardner to take another step and O'Reilly to take a big step or – you know, Riley, you know, I mean, they need some of their kids to take a big step, and that's a lot to ask.
Yeah, that sounds like you're basically your typical Leafs preseason every year. If this guy can do this guy, this and this and this and this.
The one thing they got going for them is Bernier looks like he's got a chance to be a real stopper. And that, you know, he obviously won the number one job, and he looks like he's the guy, and he looks like he has potential to be real good. That's a real plus.
They're not getting many nibbles on James Reimer, are they?
I don't think so. I mean, he's a guy that's a competent backup. I wouldn't rush to move him because you got to be careful. Backup goaltenders have become real important in the NHL because if your number one guy goes down, you can miss the playoffs with the way, you know, with the way the balance in the league is. So you got to be careful. I wouldn't be in a rush to move him. I mean, yeah, he's not going to be happy. Too bad. You need the best backup you can possibly have. Why would you be in a panic to move him? And, you know, he's at a reasonable number. He's a quality guy. I wouldn't be in a panic to move him unless I knew I had somebody that could come in, and I don't see anybody else that they can sign. You know, the Brodeurs and Javi Bulins. I mean, I'm not going there.
Doug, when we watch games sometimes, I'll throw some phrases at you, and we kind of wonder where these phrases come from. So last year when watching the Leafs, I tend to pick up on the fact that I'm always hearing that Cody Franson is their only right-handed shooting defenseman, and that seemed to be a big deal and a big deal. Now they go and get Roman Polak. They go out and get Robidas. And now they have three right-handed shooting defensemen. Was it a big deal when you were a coach or GM to have it spread equally, or did you care less what way your D shot?
I used to look at number one, if the guy was really talented, that would be the number one thing. And, yeah, you want the combination. You want a 4-2 or you want a 3-3, but right-hand defensemen are hard to find, and everybody oogles and awes over them. But, you know, really, the number one thing is the guy a real player, and after that you work with it. I mean, look at Detroit. They're in dire needs of a right-handed defenseman as well, you know. Everybody is if you go around the league except three or four teams. If you have a Drew Doughty as your right-handed shooting defenseman,
The other two aren't as critical.
Right. Mm.
The other two right-hand shots aren't quite as critical if you have a Doughty as your number one right-hander. If you don't have Doughty, then you really need right-handed shooters.
So what's on the menu? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You know, this is...
I was just going to ask you, what's on the menu tonight?
Well, just a little bit of a chicken type of thing, which is kind of nice, and a little Brunello Italian red, and just sort of listening to the waves. Very quiet. And then I've got a great novel I'm reading. Mm-hmm. It's called The Art of Fielding. Have you ever read that book?
No, but I'm familiar. It was a bestseller for a while.
Is it about men's league softball?
It's a baseball. It's a college kid who's, you know, I'm only at page 150, but it's a great book. So I've got that. And then I've got Netflix. Just started to watch The Suit last night. We finished Homeland, so we've moved to The Suit, which is a lawyer. So there's a ton of things going on here.
Sounds like Millard's not around if you're getting all this
Millard
quiet time.
Millard arrived last night.
Okay.
So he sent a note to me today that he was in town. Did I need anything? And then I just phoned him and said, look, do you want to drop down tonight for a visit and come for dinner tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Does he still have the Porsche there?
It's not a real Porsche. It's like one of the, it's called a Boxster.
Oh, it's like an 80s one.
Yeah, it's a girl's Porsche.
Now, when you
I'm kidding. I don't want any nasty tweets.
That's okay.
When you say he went into town, now, do you mean Charlottetown? Where did he go into?
Summerside. Yeah, he went into Summerside, and then he sent me a note that I need anything.
Wow.
Anyway.
West Enders, eh?
He came a week early because he said he needs a week before Jen comes to open up the place. I'm thinking, you never locked it when you left.
Yeah. So if anybody wants a free cottage outside of
there
Summerside.
You go.
Exactly. So I'll see him probably tomorrow, but I'm not rushing. Well, I saw him all winter.
So is he in training for the charity game they have down there? Has he already begun his dry land for that?
Well, he and Drew McIntyre battled. He lost in a shootout to Drew McIntyre last summer. And now he thinks he's a goalie. It's kind of embarrassing. He takes it way too serious.
Is he the only guy that goes on vacation to Prince Edward Island and brings his hockey equipment with him?
It's unbelievable. He's got all his designer goaltending equipment here. It's bizarre. And they think he's a celebrity here. But, you know, it's bizarre.
I hear the dog barking.
Last week they had the Boys and Girls Club celebrity tournament.
I heard that was a big one.
Unbelievable. Yep. Bobby Hull was here. Ray Bourque was here. Marty McSorley was here.
Wow.
Like, it was unbelievable.
Nice.
Walter Gretzky was here. It was really. It was, and Bob Sweeney. It was unbelievable. It was cool.
Did you play in that one?
No, I hurt my hip jogging in L.A., and I'm just in therapy right now, so I couldn't play. My swing's off.
The therapy begins tonight with that Italian red, doesn't it?
Yeah. You hurt your hip jogging. You're supposed to look both ways before you cross.
I'm coming, Jill. Turn off the barbecue.
All right. There he is. I hear the dog barking, too, so Millard probably pulled up.
See you, buddy.
It's been great chatting with you.
Get back to living your dream.
See you, guys.
See you, guys. See you. It's Doug McLean.
One day I'm just going to show up there one day.
He keeps telling us, you know, hey, if you guys ever want to come to PEI, mm-hmm. I mean, I've got places for you. And I told him, Doug, I don't want to buy a place. I mean, I wouldn't mind going, but I may do that. You could go, and then Brunson Newfie.
Yeah, they'll open the doors up for you down there. I was down east last week, but I stayed in Pictou County in the Halifax area. But Brunson, he said he drives through Pictou County on his way home every summer, but I said stop in, but he's hitting the highway then. And then Summerside to Pictou, it's a long way. And if you're from Nova Scotia, you don't go to PEI. And if you're from PEI, you don't go to Nova Scotia because I don't want to say they're the same, but...
Does anybody go to New Brunswick?
Not really.
My only time over to PEI, I was doing a story in New Brunswick and on Rael Cormier. And I looked out from his place and I said, that big bridge.
Yeah.
PEI.
Yeah.
He said, yes. So I figured it's one province, one of the, you know.
It's all kind of this, like New Brunswick right across PEI is beautiful. Nova Scotia right across PEI is beautiful. And
it's a long-ass bridge.
Oh, it's big. Yeah, 15K or something.
It's like 40 bucks to get across.
I've never taken it. I've only taken the ferry.
Took
the ferry last summer to PEI. We had a great time. PEI is beautiful. It's just a chilled out place. It's gorgeous.
Great beer.
Yeah, there's a lot of good beer down there.
Great beer. Anyhow. We appreciate Doug McLean joining us on the spur of the moment from the palatial McLean estate in PEI, and managed to get the Cody Franson matter dealt with. Big story in Detroit. The Ilitches have a vision for a new state-of-the-art arena. It's only going to cost $1.8 billion. It'll be situated in downtown Detroit. Go on our Sportsnet website. Check out my column. I've got a link to the some of the specs for the arena. It is spectacular.
The pictures are
amazing.
Yeah, it's out of this world. It's beyond your imagination.
It truly is. And, of course, the first thing I wondered is this is a city that's turning water off the people and has sinkholes in the downtown area, but they're building a $1.8 billion arena. Anyhow, it looks sweet, and they do need a new arena. John Gallagher of the Detroit Free Press, he's been all over the story. He'll join us. I'll talk to him about the architectural significance of this arena, and I'll also ask him about the money. The hell's Detroit doing building a new arena? Back to more primetime sports on the Sportsnet Radio and TV network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
We are back with Primetime Sports for Monday, July 21st. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan, joined by Ken Reed of Sportsnet. McCowan's back in a couple of weeks. Everybody relax. I only say that for another day or so, and then I just get used to
when
it.
When is he back?
2 weeks.
Oh, wow. He's got a lot of vacation. In case we didn't know.
Just figure.
Yeah. Just,
really?
Just dawned on me.
Just figure that out?
Yeah.
Guess what? The city of Detroit is, I didn't say the city of Detroit's building, but they're building a new state-of-the-art arena in downtown Detroit. And it is, if you get a chance, go online, go on our website, sportsnet.ca, check out my column. There's a link to it. It is remarkable. Just from a purely from an architectural point of view, just from a sports fan staring at a facility mm-hmm. point of view, it is an absolutely, absolutely spectacular arena.
You can see why George Costanza lied to women and said he was an architect when you see something like this, because this is fabulous.
It is fabulous. It's slated to open in 2017, and John Gallagher is a reporter with the Detroit Free Press. His story today in the Free Press, just talking about the architectural significance of this particular facility, the deconstructed design, glass-covered streetscape, lighted roof design. It really is. It really looks remarkable. And John Gallagher joins us on Primetime Sports. John, thanks so much for doing this. I'm going to ask the question that other people are going to ask, people from outside Detroit. But all we hear about Detroit is the city's broke, and yet here it is, building a new $1.8 billion arena. Before we get to the architectural significance of this, is this good business for Detroit?
Well, that's a good question. And, of course, that's part of the debate we're having today. Some people think that the you know, the public subsidies that go into this will more than be made up mm-hmm. with all the new development that's going to come around. And other people think they ask the same question you did. It's how can you possibly do this when the city's in bankruptcy and the schools are in bad shape and the streets aren't always safe and we've got multiple other problems. So, you know, we're having that same debate, and really, I guess there's no real answer to it. It depends which direction you're coming from.
So what was the reaction, John? Was there any people kind of up in arms over this, or was it generally accepted, wow, this is very innovative, and let's just go with that?
Yeah, well, I think it's kind of the political and business corporate world is sort of thinks this is wonderful and is all in favor of it. A lot of the more neighborhood folks, the people concerned about schools and traffic and transportation issues and that kind of thing are a little more cautious and saying, well, this looks pretty impressive. Are they really going to carry out all their promises? I mean, they promised, for example, to hire 51% of all the construction workers from residents in the city of Detroit. Are they really going to do that? You know, so taking more of a wait-and-see attitude. So the range of reaction is pretty great. But I think everybody, as you said, looks just pretty impressive just on the face of it.
So let's get to the impressive part. The words that caught my eye as I read your article are deconstructed design. Now, I'm no architect, but I've never heard of deconstructed design, and maybe I'm just not that bright, but what is deconstructed design?
Well, that is pretty interesting. What they're doing, if you think of a normal stadium, you have the playing surface, you have the seats around it, and then beyond the seats you have the concourse levels where you have, you know, the restaurants and the clubs and the team offices and the souvenir stands and all that. Well, what they're doing, they're taking all that stuff that's in the outer ring and breaking it off and moving it away from the seating bowl and covering kind of the air. They're putting it all in separate buildings on the outskirts, and then they're doing this glass-covered street around the seating bowl. So instead of having it all in a big box, you've broken it apart. And this glass-covered street is going to be open year-round, and that will have a lot of restaurants and shops and all kinds of stuff in it. So it's really becomes more of a, instead of a big box like the current Joe Louis Arena here in Detroit, you know, where the Red Wings play, you're going to have more of a village with separate buildings surrounding the seating bowl and the playing surface. So it's, you know, it's pretty different, pretty interesting looking.
John Gallagher of the Detroit Free Press joins us on Primetime Sports. And as you point out as well, Christopher Illich, who's president and CEO of Illich Holdings, this is going to be opened not just on game or event days, but it's going to be opened year-round, the street area.
The street area, right. And that's one of the big selling points, to make this as lively as possible. So it's not just, you know, on the dates when the Red Wings play or Kid Rock has a concert, but it's going to be open year-round. So you'll be able to walk over and get lunch or whatever, buy flowers or whatever they have there. I mean, we don't know yet. But they'll also be, as part of these outer buildings that's going to ring the seating bowl, they're going to have new apartments. They're talking, you know, some dozens or whatever, new apartments in there, rental apartments. So you could actually live there and overlook this little street, and you could have corporate events in there, and you can do all kinds of things. So that, you know, I think the cost and public subsidies and all that issue aside, it strikes me as a pretty interesting way to build an arena.
Sounds like you're essentially, it's almost as if you're putting an area of the city or creating a part of the city that's going to be in a bubble almost. I mean, that's, you know, just off the top.
Yeah, they hope to make it really integrated.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you think about the way stadiums were built for years and years, you built a huge dome in the middle of nowhere with parking all around it. Well, in this case, they're going to try to really make it like they did the baseball stadium in Baltimore or Comerica Park here, where you build it and tuck it right in the city streets.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have restaurants right across the street instead of parking. So I think they're going to try to integrate it very well so it won't be a bubble. One thing they want to do is to build it lower into the ground, so recess the playing surface about 30 feet below the ground so that the profile of the arena is lower, so you don't have this imposing, you know, big, huge, monolithic thing, but it's more of a human scale kind of thing. So, you know, they're trying to be really thoughtful. And the Illich is, you know, typically in Detroit, they'll do one really amazing thing about every 10 years. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Comerica Park really worked out well. And I think that this arena thing looks pretty interesting.
John, it was good of you to join us today. It's a fascinating looking building, and hopefully it does turn out well for the city of Detroit. Thanks again.
Sure. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Is John Gallagher of the Detroit Free Press, their business section. It's just a great looking place. I will throw this out, though, cautionary note, when Comerica Park is a great ballpark. It's one of the, I think, one of the best designed ballparks in baseball. But it was sold to the people of Detroit as helping create its own sort of vibrant neighborhood around it.
Wrigleyville of Detroit,
Wrigleyville.
Kind of thing.
That ain't happened.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't happened at all. You can walk down from Comerica Park and there's dilapidated buildings. Nonetheless, it's certainly an interesting architectural concept, and we appreciate John Gallagher joining us. We're going to talk a little baseball in the next hour and some NFL. John Waro for the Associated Press will join us. Talk about the Buffalo Bills sale. Could Canadians be buying the Buffalo Bills and keeping them in Buffalo? Why not? It's Primetime Sports, the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.